From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of December, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Stephanie Ho will join us from the United States Department of Agriculture. She talked with Brad Rippey, meteorologist there, about La Nina, the impact it has on drought in the western states, and whether those tornadoes in the southeast might be related to La Nina as well. And then as we close out our time together, we'll look further to the south, to South America, in fact, and talk about drought in parts of Argentina and Brazil, and some really wet weather in Brazil as well, with Mike Tenner from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $5.91 and a quarter, 5.5 cents higher. The May contract at $5.92 and three quarters, up 5.5 cents. And December, new crop harvest month, up 3.5 cents at $5.47 and a quarter. January soybeans, 14 and three quarters higher at $12.77 and a quarter. The March at $12.78 and a quarter, up 13 cents. And November beans, 5.5 higher at $12.46 and a quarter. The bean meal at $3.72.30, a dime higher for the day. The bean oil up $1.18 at $54.65. Wheat futures at $7.70 and a half, 14.5 higher. In the soft red, the hard red up 18 and a quarter at $8.03 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at $137 and a nickel, up 47.5 cents for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle were down 15 today at $164.32 and a half, and lean hogs at $80.35 even, $1.02 and a half higher. Crude oil futures at $72.38 a barrel, $1.51 higher. Diesel fuel up 4.5 cents at $2.26 and six tenths of a cent, and the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.17 and seven tenths, up about a nickel. Natural gas trading at $3.62 and two tenths of a cent, down 4 and six tenths of a cent on the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 35,829 is up around 13 points. The S&P 500 at 4,663 is down 37.5 on the afternoon. And the gold futures for the day at $1,796.5, up $32. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us. Matt, thank you for being with us, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about your broad view of the corn, soybean, and wheat markets at this time as we go into the end of the calendar year.
You know, it's been interesting to see how these markets have traded. The bean market sure has looked weak at times lately. But then this dryness in South America creeps in as far as Argentina and southern Brazil goes, you know, and all of a sudden the bean market, which had broken under support levels, comes to life again. And so, you know, you see the corn market staying fairly strong. I think a lot of folks felt like corn would stay strong. You know, basis has been awfully good. A lot of worry about how many acres we'll get for next year. So I think from a broad-based spectrum, I've felt a little more friendly towards corn all along. But, you know, of course, whenever Argentina starts talking dry weather, it changes the entire discussion. But, you know, you look over at the wheat market, and it's gotten beat up lately and finally had a good day today. But sure has a little bit of room to make up some ground. But at the same time, I think a producer that, you know, for instance, has a really good-looking wheat crop coming needs to understand that the July wheat still at 768. I mean, we haven't had a lot of times when we could sell wheat there. So, yeah, we could probably get back over $8 again, especially if corn and beans rally. But I'll tell you what, from my vantage point, wheat prices still look pretty good.
Do you think a weather market developing in South America at this time for first crop is a bit late at this point?
The thing is they're not even completely done in Argentina planting their crop, okay? As far as Brazil goes, there's no question that a lot of those beans in Brazil are far enough along that they're going to be all right. I mean, what I keep hearing from some of the people that we talk to, you know, is that the beans that are good are going to be good enough. That southern Brazil, where they're not near as far along, those beans aren't going to be able to pull your national average down. They're still looking at mid-140s, you know, as far as how big the crop's going to be, maybe even bigger than that. So I do think that that Brazil crop's going to be very big. I think the thing that people need to understand is part of the reason the bean market's so strong is, you know, with Argentina, yeah, the crop still looks good, but the forecast is for hot and dry, and they are still under La Nina. So with that being the case, there's no question that you could look towards the history, you know, of a bean market rally. A lot of times in the past, been led by soybean meal due to the fact that Argentina's dry, due to the fact that Argentina puts half the world's soybean meal out there.
It seems to me that an awful lot of corn has been moving off of the farm this week. Is that a regional, local function, or are you hearing of larger movements from JSA in general?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt basis has been pretty strong in most areas. I think even in our part of the world, you know, basis has been much stronger than what most would assume it would be. It's been interesting to see that, you know, some of these areas maybe posting a 25 over like we're seeing locally, but we're hearing about 35 to 40 over push. There's no doubt that even though this was a national record yield, it sure looks to me like the basis is indicating that some of your originators are concerned with how much ownership they have to this point. So I do think basis is awfully strong. There's no guarantee it's going to stay this strong. So producers need to also remember that, especially when there's no carry in the market, that, you know, the market's begging for your corn now. And we know that to be a fact, but we sure don't know whether it's going to be later. I got to think that corn's going to be really good property, but we don't know that for a fact.
How are you viewing next year's crop sales at this point for corn and soybeans?
Well, I mean, essentially, as far as corn's concerned, you're going to have to keep corn prices, you know, stable to better, especially if these input prices stay where they're at. So, you know, I don't know that an acreage battle means somebody has to rally, but I think corn needs to rally in relation to soybeans, you know, or you're going to have a hard time getting much over 90. And so lately, the ratios were in the favor of soybeans versus corn, you know, but at the same time, it's a pretty salty ratio in favor of corn there for quite some time. So, you know, I think 1250 is a possibility.
Oh, it seems that we have lost Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net for the afternoon. We'll try to catch up with him again later. Again, he's with AgMarket.net, and he joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Let's take a moment to preview what will be coming up on the Closing Market Report over the winter break on the 24th. That's Christmas Eve. We'll begin the process. However, Commodity Week will be a fresh one that afternoon. However, the Closing Market Report will be our Christmas Day special, so be sure to tune in on that one. That's on Friday, the 24th day of December. And then winter break really takes off for me, and I'll be gone, but have prepared some shows for you. Starting on Monday, December the 27th. On that day, we'll talk about a different path for all kinds of policy and other issues and things that are happening with agriculture across the United States. Should be a good program. We'll revisit the price outlook special that we put together with the Farm Doc team earlier in the month, where they dropped that 96 million acre corn number for 2022 and the $4.25 price. We'll hear on that day from Scott Irwin and Mr. Jansen, Joe, that is, about their price outlook. The following day, we'll take up supply chain issues. That'll be on Wednesday the 29th during the Closing Market Report. And then we'll come back to some challenges ahead, including how Brazil has been moving forward in agriculture over the past decade and a half, what that will look like over the next decade, and some of the other challenges that will be coming forward. And then on Friday the 31st, we'll go into the Wayback Machine for our Commodity Week program and hear a conversation I held in 1995 with Norman Borlaug. It's one of my favorite conversations. I hope you can tune in for it all that week of winter break here on the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, farmland values in the Midwest are up some 29% in Iowa, in fact. After several years of modest gains and losses, the average value of an acre of Iowa farmland skyrocketed about 29% in 2021. The nominal value of an acre of farmland is now higher than at any point since Iowa State University began surveying values in 1941 and is 12% higher than the previous peak in 2013. However, the current value in inflation-adjusted terms is still lower than that for the 2012-2013 era. The last time farmland values increased more than 25% was in 2011, when values rose 32.5%. An Iowa State University researcher says this increase for the year is due in part to much stronger commodity prices, thanks to higher exports, stronger than expected crop yields, and strong ad hoc COVID-19 related government payments. The survey found that the average statewide value of an acre of farmland is $9,751 an acre, an increase of 29% or $2,193 since 2020. Well, scientists say human-caused climate change make extreme weather events more likely, and according to a new research published Wednesday in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. The 10th edition of the report, explaining extreme events in 2020 from a climate perspective, presents 18 new peer-reviewed analyses of extreme weather conditions across the world during 2020. A National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration study, the NOAA, that examined the U.S. Southwest drought using several different model simulations, found climate change may have increased the likelihood that the monsoon season rains would fail as they did in 2020, reigniting a multi-year drought. One trend emerging in the past several years is several studies that find climate change is reducing the risk of certain types of extreme events, typically cold outbreaks or heavy precipitation. Stephanie Herring, a NOAA climate scientist, says the report reinforces the scientific consensus that human influence has created a new climate, one that's impacting extreme events today. And finally today, the Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, is conducting the 2021 Farm Producer Study. The study seeks to improve knowledge and understanding of agricultural producers and help USDA improve services to them. A brief questionnaire will be mailed this month to approximately 75,000 U.S. ag producers across the country. Taking no more than 10 minutes to complete the questionnaire, ask participants for demographic and basic farm information. Census and Survey Division Director Barbara Rader says the results of the study may lead to more robust demographic data products. Producers can respond online as well at agcounts.usda.gov or, of course, by mail. The deadline for response is January the 18th, 2022. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Have you visited our refreshed website yet? I hope so, but if not, drop by willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find all of our programming, or at least a lot of it. Commodity Week and Closing Market Report are both there for you to listen to anytime you'd like. In fact, that second program will record this afternoon. Our special guest on Commodity Week this week include Matt Bennett of agmarket.net, along with Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing and Mike Zuzla, GlobalCom Research. You can hear that up on our website at willag.org tonight by about 6 o'clock tomorrow afternoon on many of these radio stations, and many of them will carry it over the weekend as well. You can always listen to those programs again on our website, and there you'll also find information from the agricultural economist and crop scientist at the University of Illinois, the Farm Doc team, and a way to check us out as a podcast. If you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll find links to Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast 2, and there are other links so you can check out the USDA reports or the latest from the Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. Up next, we'll hear from Stephanie Ho at USDA. She's been asking Brad Rippey, meteorologist there, about La Nina and what kind of weather impacts it has. For instance, does La Nina linger, and what happens after it dissipates, and how much drought might develop in the coming season, and does La Nina have an impact on weather in the southeast, and possibly that severe weather and the tornadoes from this past week?
Does La Nina have anything to do with the severe weather that brought devastating tornadoes to the southeast?
Research has shown that there is, unfortunately, an enhanced likelihood of significant winter to early spring severe weather outbreaks during La Nina.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says one reason is the northern jet stream is very active.
So that active jet stream alone can contribute to severe thunderstorm development at an unusual time of year in the south and the lower Midwest.
La Nina also tends to bring warmer air to the southern half of the country.
So that can be a contributing factor, bringing that warm air northward, mixing with the cold air to the north, and that also can contribute to severe weather outbreaks.
He adds that the first severe weather outbreak in December actually happened on the 5th and 6th.
That did not result in loss of life, but it was kind of a precursor to the huge December 10th outbreak.
The country is heading into a second consecutive winter with La Nina present.
As we move forward into the new year and beyond, La Nina's presence dictates that we are likely to see drier than normal conditions returning across areas from Southern California to the Southern Great Plains.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
That dryness likely to extend eastward along the Gulf Coast and into parts of the South. Eastern United States as well. Now, prospects for additional relief from the drought are better as you move northward through the West.
Some areas where storms are likely to bring drought relief include the Pacific Northwest and the Northern Rockies.
We tend to see more precipitation, more storminess in the northern half of the Western U.S., less storminess and more warmth in the Southwest. And so that leads us to concerns that we could see drought further intensifying by the time we get to spring from Southern California through the Southern Rockies and Southern Great Plains.
Drought and La Nina tend to go hand in hand.
The previous two double dip La Ninas were either accompanied or immediately followed by some of our highest drought coverage of the 21st century.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says a double dip La Nina is one that lasts for more than 1 year.
For example, the La Nina that lasted from 1998 to 2001 was immediately followed by significant drought and accompanied and trailed by significant drought. Drought coverage peaked in 2002, actually after La Nina had ended.
He says the same thing happened with the 2010 to 2012 La Nina.
We saw drought coverage peaking with a record high, almost two-thirds of the country, in September of 2012, shortly after La Nina officially ended. So that is a concern as we move forward. Even if La Nina does end in the spring of 2022, we could continue to see elevated drought coverage right on through the remainder of 2022.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
On this Thursday, let's check the weather forecast with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. We sure appreciate that. Hope you've had a good week. It's not been terrible here in Illinois. Warm, if a little gray sometimes.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice. Just a lot of wind over the last 24 hours, but that's starting to die out.
Yeah, let's not stay here in the United States, however. I want to hear more about what's happening in South America. Brazil, to start with. Are conditions changing there?
They're not changing that much, and that's why we're starting to think about some problems. The southern growing region has been unusually dry since late October, and in fact, Paraná is at pretty high risk of having its driest November and December period since at least 1985. So this is a fairly unprecedented situation in recent decades. Conversely, as we move into the central areas of Brazil, where the other half of soybeans are produced, they have the opposite problem where it just keeps on raining. And neither of these situations are going to change very much. So we think that southern areas are going to have some record levels of dryness. And in those central areas, it's pretty likely to be the wettest since at least 2001. So we're going back 20 years here in that central region of Mato Grosso before we saw a November and December period as wet as the one we're in at the moment, or the one we will be in by the time we get through some of the rains that are on the way.
Is it odd in South American weather, and I don't know whether you have enough history to look at or not, to see such a clear demarcation between really wet areas and really dry areas?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't have all of the historical data to answer that at this moment, but I can tell you this. Usually, when you see one area that's really dry, there's another area that's really wet. And you can think about what happened in the United States last year. The northwest half of the growing belt was unusually dry with that drought that was taking place in the Dakotas and Minnesota. But then as you move to the south and east, we didn't have much of a dryness story at all. It actually was a pretty good growing season because of decent rains and above normal rains across the southeast half of the corn belt. So typically that's what happens. You'll see one area end up in a drought, another area ends up getting too much rain. And we haven't seen something quite like this in recent memory in Brazil, but we can tell you that this is not an ideal setup. Typically, you'd like to have those rains spread out, and that's normally what happens, where you'll see one area get a little bit dry, and then all of a sudden it rains. One area gets a little bit wet, then all of a sudden it dries out, and everybody ends up somewhere in the middle. But we have a persistent upper-level high in Brazil, and that's what's keeping this weather pattern in place, with those southern areas dry and those central areas turning wet.
If the southern parts of Brazil are dry, are there issues in Paraguay and then further to the south in Argentina? And I'm thinking that some of their primary production areas are a little further to the west as well in that continent.
Well, it's certainly similar in Paraguay because that borders right up against Paraná in southern Brazil. And they've been seeing similar weather over this period of time. So we would just lump Paraguay right into that conversation with southern Brazil. In Argentina, the story is a little bit different in that we have seen okay rains over the last couple of months, and we even saw some earlier this week. Now, the forecast is not very promising in Argentina because that same upper level high is going to turn things pretty hot through the end of the year, and it's also going to dry things out, though there will be a few storms around. The bigger concern we have for Argentina is that if you look at the type of La Niña that's developing at the moment, this one has historical support for droughts in Argentina. The last three times we saw a similar event to this one, we had a pretty poor corn and soybean crop. And so it just looks to us like all of this is repeating. Now, it's going to take a little while before we're certain of that because it's still December 15th. We're still only in the beginning phases of planting this later planted corn in Argentina, and we're only about 60% of the way through planting the soybean crop. So we certainly can have things improve if we get later into January and February and it starts to rain and we forget about this whole conversation. But if this La Niña is indeed inducing this, then there should be concerns going forward because we have historical support for this to continue. And it's really the weather that matters in 4 to 8 weeks in Argentina that matters the most, as opposed to in Brazil where weather is becoming important right now.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll check in with you again next week to see how things are going.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.